Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. You are either on my blog, which is lorddaul.podbean.com. I try to upload to that once a week, once every other week, just depending upon my schedule. I train fighters, and I have a gym that I run here in Fort Worth, Texas. So sometimes I get busy, and I'm not able to get to it, but most 2 weeks is the biggest gap, and I try to go every week. I'll be here this week, and of course, I'll be here next week as well if we go into the biggest kickboxing card of the year. But I upload to it, once a week, once every other week. And then, of course, the easiest way to get my podcast, the most efficient way, is to go to iTunes search engine and enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and the show pops right up. Got a lot of stuff to talk about, really do. I'm excited about what's going on in the kickfighting world because lately, I feel like people don't notice it when things are going really, really well in kickboxing since K1's been gone. But next week, of course, with Badr Hari and Rico Verheeven, that fight's going to be a big deal. So I definitely think that there's a really good chance that the buzz returns and people realize how good things are. But, I'm not going to talk about a K1 card today, and I'm not going to talk about a Glory card, outside, of course, remembering Mark DePonte. But when I look at what was going on in the kickboxing world lately and the fights that are coming up and the weekends that we're having, it's been, just exciting time after exciting time. It really has been a really fun time to pay attention to the sport and the good things that are happening in the sport. And, I'm watching young prospects, kind of take their places, best in the world, like it's you look at it and you laugh at it, because you're not realizing just how phenomenal it is that, Masaaki Nori was once a, up and coming prospect that I watched, at 15, 16 years old and a Koshin, tournaments, making his way in that development league that they had for K1. And now to watch him be one of the best fighters in the world fighting and having success outside of Japan as well as in Japan, after the results from, a week ago. But that's really cool, Tayfun Oskin, it's really cool to see him develop into the fighter that he's become, how strong he is. I remember him when I first heard about him and some of the success that he had early. I didn't know what to carry, especially after the first Muhammad Jiraiya fight. And it seems like since the Muhammad Jiraiya fight, he's gotten stronger and really maintained. And we'll go into that a little bit more later. But it's just to see how strong, he's gotten and the changes and the development that's happening in a lot of these athletes. It's been a lot of fun paying attention to kickboxing this past year. And as I was sitting down and I was going through a lot of these cards, it just kept hitting me that, man, we really are in a good time. We really are getting a good product. We really are seeing some of the best fighters in the world. So, I'm excited to sit down and watch these fights and bring these athletes to you guys and talk about what's going on in the combat sports world, because it really is, I won't say combat sports world, I'll say in the kickboxing world. I'll go ahead and, clarify it, because there's been a lot of fun things going on, and I'm excited to see what's coming for the future, and I'm excited to see, all the new cards, all the great fights coming out. It's going to be a lot of fun, to see what's in store for us. So we'll go ahead and jump into it right away. I'm going to go ahead and go to France to start the show off. In my first breakdown of the show, I'm going to go to a long-running promotion called Nuit des Champions. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, because I know I've done Nuit wrong before, but I'm going to go ahead and say it how I see it. I've talked about this card. I usually do something big like once a year, and they've had a lot of good international matchups. It also just shows how strong, between this and the Daniel Sam Patrice Corderone, the audiences that have come out for some of the fight cards that they've had in France lately has just been amazing. Just been amazing and just a credit to the sport. If you are a French kickboxing or Muay Thai fan, I definitely want to thank you for the contribution that you've done, not just as, for your promoters who put on, awesome big-time shows, but also, and I can't stress this enough, for the audience attendance and participation at these events, how much they got into it. I got You know, the Daniel Sam Patrice Cotteron, I got to watch that fight from a cell phone. So my cell phone recording in the audience is how I got to watch the fight. But because they gave me that, I got the feel, I got the chant. You know, when they did the Captain Hook chant for Cotteron, and you know the way they responded, you know, when he was in trouble, and the way they responded when he had the start, anytime he let his hands go. That's important. That's important to the kickboxing sport. Not enough people realize that. Nuitas champions, the French fighters did not have the greatest of night at the top of the card, but it still showed. When I looked at how full the audience was, and I looked at the feel of the show, I really, really enjoyed it. There were several cards that went on in France. I'm just going to go ahead and talk about the fights individually, but I wanted to make a specific shout out to Nuit Des Champions, for not just putting together an awesome card, but for the level of fighters that they put together. It was really, really good. So I'll go ahead and break down the cards from France. Some of these are in different cards, but we'll go ahead and talk about four fights in particular. Johan Ladon takes on Alim Nabayev, and Johan Ladon, just as he's gotten older, I've noticed that he hasn't had the ability to find another gear. So he'll be able to score here and there, and if he's a front runner, if he gets out early, he can definitely have some success, and he's got some big wins over his career. But man, he ran into trouble with Alim Nabayev, who just was able to walk him down. Alim Nabayev is a pretty good sized guy. I remember once upon a time I thought he was going to be the one of the better fighters in the world at 70 kgs. His physical frame looks like has me now excited about what he's going to be able to do if he were to get the chance to fight at 77 kgs in glory, because he's a good sized dude. You know, he's a good sized kid. And of course, you guys have been following the show. I've been watching Nabayev for a very long time. Got the opportunity to see him really young. And then, of course, when he was 17 and Aziz Kalal was 18, they fought in a one of these guys is going to, these are two fights to look for, are two future stars to pay attention to down the road. Since then, Aziz Kalal's fought in glory, fought in infusion, had some big wins. Alim Nabayev, still looking for that opportunity, still looking for that step up opportunity. He's one of the better fighters out there that hasn't gotten that call yet, but he brought the pressure. He played with body kicks, but the main way he had success with Ladon was he got into the clinch. He was able to score, excuse me, he was able to score boxing combinations, fluid whenever he walked them down, finding body rips, definitely good, strong work upstairs. And then he'd go right into the clinch, right into the grapple, and he'd score a couple of knees. And in round three in particular, if he didn't have the mandatory elbow pads that sometimes they are forced to wear in France. Sometimes the promoters do it. Sometimes it's just kind of wherever the card takes place in the governing body of that event. Sometimes they've got to have those elbow pads on there. But there was a period of time in round three where he was just slicing Ladon up, and he was just throwing everything, and every elbow kept scoring. And I was like, wow, this kid's really showing all the goods. And again, he could do both styles easily. He could easily go from this to kickboxing and not throw an elbow and not work in the clinch. But Nabayev, the step knees, the movement, the switching stance. Nabayev always does this thing where if he's in his southpaw stance and you kick his inside leg, he'll just let it, I call it riding the wave. He'll just let the leg drift back and then bring his front leg forward and attack you with a boxing combination in the orthodox stance immediately, never letting you rest, never letting you have the satisfaction of thinking that you scored something that slowed him. He brings the fight right away. In the last round, it was clear that Nasser Kay had gotten on, Ladon, like, you're going to have to let something go. And right off the bat, he tried to unleash this kind of sneaky, fired an uppercut that missed. And then during the round, he looked for moments to push his advantage and look for kicks here and there and through combinations. And at one period of time, he had finally backed Nabayev up to the ropes, and he threw his hands a little bit. But Nabayev just kind of laughed, called him on, and then went right after him. And then the fight was more of the same. I'd say Ladon had his back to the ropes, or close to the ropes, for about 85% of this fight. The younger version of him, the guy who, went to Contender Asia 2, I think that guy could have offered a little bit more resistance. And Ladon's a solid fighter, but man, he's getting older and it's getting tougher. Whereas Nabayev is one of the fighters for the future. We're talking about another guy around that, between 20 and 24. We've got so many huge up-and-coming stars in kickboxing with so much skill. And it's just going to be exciting to see what happens with these guys moving forward. Shout out to Alim Nabayev. Somebody's got to give you the call up at some period of time. Bruce Cadron is, you know, one-sidedly beaten by Chingiz Alazov. It's interesting because Cadron, after one round, he kind of had that look of, you know, who they put me in here with. Because Chingiz is so mean with that left leg. And I remember when he first burst on the scene in the fight code cards in Italy, he just would come out there and he would just blow people out. I remember Ryan Scalia, you know, boxing writer, MMA writer, at the time he was on my podcast and we were talking about him back in the day, and he is really big on him. And I liked him too, but at that time he didn't have the opposition. He just had the skills. You know, he's blowing people out, but he didn't have the skill set. But now, you know, he has beaten some legit guys. He's putting together a fantastic resume. He's, you know, that left leg is just mean. Always had good combination flow. Always had good step knees. He pretty much was, you know, smashing Cadron from the beginning. The thing that made this fight interesting was the ref was clearly one-sidedly favoring the, you know, clinch work, are favoring Cadron as far as trying to save him from Chingiz's clinch work, from, you know, grapples that hung onto easy situations where all the ref had to do was separate him and call him to fight again. He would turn and he would look at Alazov and he was like trying to, you know, I guess force his will on him. It's one of those things where it's like if you were a foreigner and you watch this fight, you'd be like, oh, they're just doing this because the French guy's losing so bad. It had that feel to it. And unfairly, fair or unfair, that was how it felt. That was how it felt watching it. So after having these exchanges happen, in the fourth round, I believe, the ref decides that he's going to take a point. Like, he moves him, he says, clenches, takes a point. And then you could see that, you know, Chingiz was, like, upset. He's trying to say, hey, I'm going off the rules, the kind of stuff, whatever. The ref wasn't happening. As retaliation for this point taking away, Chingiz Alazov then goes out there and murders Cadron. Like, he just goes out there and just unleashes offense that it seemed like he could have done in any period of time. And he started to unleash these mean high kicks. They were, you know, Cadron was trying to get the guard up. But, you know, the legs were just coming too quick. And then after a couple of them, he unleashed a looping left hand that followed one of his power, you know, high kicks with the left leg. And it just dropped Cadron out cold. And it was one of those things where I was like, man, they should have switched him out with the ref. Because clearly the thing that urged that, you know, series of violent acts was this ref picking on, unfairly picking on Chingiz Alazov for what was happening in the clinch. Unfairly pointing him out as the person who was at fault every single time it happened. And Alazov just kind of went beast mode to try to make sure, maybe out of fear of, could they be doing this on the scorecards as well? But whatever it was, he just went out there and went kill streak. And Bruce Cadron is not what I would call an elite guy, but he's not bad either. But man, this was it's my favorite knockout of the year. So if you say, what's my KO of the year? There's been some good ones. That's my favorite right now. Just the way it happened, I think it's just because of the feel of the ref picking on him. KO of the year, that one definitely, I lean in that direction. It was some good stuff. As for Chingiz moving forward, it's been said in this podcast many times and for several years now, I just don't understand how no one's called up Alazov. It just, he is, again, who you know management, that matters. Because I remember when I was in Holland and Yunus Al-Masani, one of the better fighters on the planet, he never got the opportunity to fight consistently for an It's Showtime, for K1, because he didn't have the management that some of the other guys did. A lot of the guys who were signed with Simon Roots got those opportunities out of Holland, and a lot of guys who weren't didn't get the call-ups as much. So he's one of those guys where it's like, man, I wanted to see what was happening, with his career, but it didn't happen because of management. I don't know if Chingiz is in the same spot, if he doesn't have people that are, you know, making that call or getting that call back. I don't know if that's the case. All I do know is, man, this guy, it makes no sense that he's not a regular roster spot at one of the more elite organizations. He's not just beating elite guys out there, he's stopping elite guys out there. He gets his opportunity in step-up bouts, he usually wins them. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in a few moments with Patrice Corderone. But Alazov, I don't know what it is, but if you're out there and you're a promoter, are you working for Glory, and they sit down, they have a meeting, and they say, hey, who needs to be in this organization that is not in this organization? Chingiz Alazov's got to be the first name that's said. Moving on to another fight that took place in France. Patrice Corderone went against Daniel Sam, and as I said before, the crowd was bumping. They were all they were so excited, jumping. I said the Captain Hook chants. They were getting behind their guy. Plus the lead up to this. This is one of my favorite. This was built on Facebook. Like, people don't understand this. You know, like, there was trash talk back and forth, but Daniel Sam went into this fight pretty much, you know, Facebook videoing his, you know, journey along the way of how he was going to respond to always over there talking trash and oh, you know, this is what I'm doing in camp. I'm getting ready and I can't wait to shut him up in his hometown. And it was just done so well. And when the fight happened, you can feel it. You can feel it in the audience that these two talking back and forth in social media is what built this. And that's something that doesn't happen in kickboxing, you know, very much. A perfect example of this, Eddie Nate Slimani and Masaki Nori, I watched their fight, and I think that it had like 6,000 views or something like that. You know, when I got the, now not everybody knows about that fight, but it had something like 6,000 views, between 6,000 and 8,000 views the last time I checked it. It could be more now. The cell phone video recording of the fight that I, you know, of the Sam Corderon fight that I watched was at like 170,000 like views, and it just happened. So in that short period of time, that many people were interested in what happened to this fight, all built on internet and social media buzz. In the fight, Corderon actually had a pretty decent start. You can make the argument that he won round one. I thought Daniel Sam was conservative. He played with his guard up. He looked for inside leg kicks here and there. He looked to score a couple shots, played in the clinch. And the reason why I played in the clinch was because Patrice Corderon if you've ever seen Corderon fight before, it's not that he comes out with this super technical, awesome kickboxing game. He just kind of overwhelms you with size, mauls you, gets forward, works you in the clinch, and then he starts throwing wide shots once he closes the distance. He's a big guy. He can be sloppy and he can be clean at times, but he doesn't really put together technical kickboxing performances for a whole fight. Multiple times he's going to, you know, stuff his own offense, get to the clinch, and then in this case he starts throwing a lot of knees at the leg of Daniel Sam when they're in those clinch moments. They didn't seem to bother Sam too much. He just kind of stayed poised and calm. But you can make the argument that due to activity and the rate at which he was throwing the wild shots, Patrice Corderon had gotten himself maybe round one. Round two has the similar start, scores with single kicks, scores with punches here and there, and then goes into the grapple. Then, bang, Daniel Sam catches him with overhand right, gets him in trouble, has him hurt. He holds on for dear life. Corderon did do a good job of holding on and getting his wits about him because he continued to just take big shots all around. But at that point, Sam had, you know, I think mentally Sam's like, I got him. He knew that big shot had him in trouble. Since that, he was able to physically take over the fight. Even though Corderon looked bigger, Sam looked like he was equally as strong. And in the third round, as Corderon, you know, as usually does, as he slows down, despite having offense here and there, Sam took it to him physically as well. So again, the big shots in round two that almost stopped Corderon, almost dropped him. And then in the work with counter kicking, body kicking, he had a series where he really let the left leg go strong to the body a couple times, and Corderon wasn't able to match with a returning kick as powerful. He showed me a lot of good stuff. I mean, I was really, it was the kind of fight that, you know, showed me a lot of good stuff as far as Sam goes and going into enemy territory and getting that kind of W. He was confident the whole time. It was an awesome showing. I mean, I was really pleased to see how well, you know, the crowd received it, how well the action was. It was awesome from start to finish. So I'm excited to see what happens with these guys moving forward. I want to see more of Sam and higher level opportunities, even though, you know, he's been, you know, win some, lose some when he's fought in glory. It's where he belongs. Patrice Corderon, he has always, you know, prided himself on being a guy that a lot of people don't fight. And the problem with that logic and the problem with, you know, that breakdown is, man, he loses those step-up opportunities. You know, Paul Swinski went down to Jamaica, and I was there, and I watched that Champions versus Champions fight, and Corderon tried to make it his kind of a fight, you know, clinch, put guys up on the ropes, throw wild shots. And unfortunately for him, Paul Swinski, who was really a combination low kicker at the time, who would find a big shot here and there, he just bit down on his mouthpiece and started throwing big shots back. And he found them. He found the big shots, and he's able to get Corderon out of there. Daniel Sam, he is a steady heavyweight that you can have in a lot of promotions. You could use him against a lot of the elite guys, but he's always been a guy on the on the outside of the top 20 looking in. You know, in some cases maybe you say top 20, but he's always been a guy looking, you know, at the elite, and hasn't had that moment yet at the top. If you're Cotterone and you've been complaining about, you know, getting top level opposition to fight you, you got to win if this fight comes together. And he did not. Daniel Sam did his work. Daniel Sam gets the W, and he moves forward for more, you know, prize fighting opportunities. Cotterone, back to the drawing board. Perhaps he, you know, tries to fight somebody else out there to give him a name. But, you know, it's not beating the Bob Saps of the world. Does not move your kickboxing career, and it does not count as a huge high-level win. You've got to beat some guys who we know. Last fight I'm going to talk about, Eddie Nate Slimani fights Masaki Nori. Of course, the jokes are, Masaki Nori is my son, of course, because, you know, I've been following him for a very long time. He's a guy I've been promoting for a very, very long time, as has the skill set to be one of the better fighters in the world. And now to see that it's true, you know, he's not number one in his weight class. Koo Fairtex is, you know, my number one. Koo's my, you know, fighter of the year. But he fought him. You know, he's fought him, and Nori's gone out there, and he's fought and beat the best. He's avenged his loss. He's had a really good year. You look at his whole resume, he's had a fantastic year. But this, you know, dominant fight just shows the difference in skill level. I guess I can't say it's a reflection of K1's, you know, 65-ish kg class, you know, fight class over Glory's. I think that's unfair. But what I will say is Nori really showed his separation in skill level, despite the fact that he's got kind of a patient game. You know, he'll come out there, he plays with the low kicks, hook low kick, he builds on offense. But this fight, where normally you see him start really hammering with the low kicks and then taking advantage of the work that he's done before in rounds 2 and 3, plus he's got this surprising ability to sneak a knee up, surprising power in his wiry frame. Masaki Nori's got a lot of skills, does a lot of good things, but his normal game is still, he's going to work your legs and then try to look for the big offense in between. Eddie Nate Slimani, of course, is a guy who I thought, you know, I thought that he had the right kind of aggression to give Sanchai some trouble earlier this year. It was not true. He did not have the right kind of aggression. Sanchai was clearly the better of those two guys when they fought, Sanchai being one of the greats of all time. But Eddie Nate Slimani is a guy out there doing it the right way. He's fighting the best. He's challenging himself against the best. And this is what I got to have more people do. The only thing that was unfortunate about this opportunity is it didn't come where more eyes were on him. But man, like, he really is putting himself out there and challenging himself to be the best. Masaki Nori started similar. Slimani throwing his volumes. Masaki Nori patiently looking for his opportunity. And for me, the fight changed in the first round where, Nori, who's used to playing guard-to-guard, it's like a guard-to-guard lockup. It's kind of a pushing series that you see in kickboxing a lot, where both guys are kind of, you know, playing an earmuff-type guard, and they'll walk up to each other, and then they'll push with their forearms, you know, like they'll get into foot, forearms and elbows, but they'll get, both opponents will get into that range. So it's not a lockup clinch, but it's literally like the clashing of two guards. So he got into that range, and then all of a sudden, he pops this smooth left hook right underneath the elbow, right behind the arm, right into the ribs. And I knew that it hurt right away. Like, and he knew it hurt right away. Because the moment he did it, Eddie, you know, Slimani stepped back. And I was like, here it comes. He put together an offensive series, and he snuck a sneaky knee in the exact same spot that he punched at. Down goes Slimani. Slimani was able to recover. Masaki Nori knew that was the beginning of the end. After that, he's still scoring to the body. He's still working that. He's still, you know, having effect. But he's also mixing his regular low kick game in. Not just low kicks, but he also likes to do a kick where he brings the heel around and he's, you know, stabs you right in the nerve of the leg with that. Like, he does different work. At this time, Slimani bites down on his mouthpiece, starts to have good series of offense where he's throwing hands. Because remember, Masaki Nori, he can slip punches here and there. But more times than not, 80% of the time, he plays behind his guard. And that gives you the opportunity to, even if you don't score big, you can at least throw and you can at least connect with something. Even if it's not the head or if it's not the body where you want, you can hit arms, you can hit something. You can do things to get yourself back in the fight and get the judges to favor you. But the steady work of body kicks and knees And then round three, the knees put it together. He puts together a couple series where Big Knee scored. And after a 3 rounds of complete kickboxing work, but in particular complete work to the body, down goes Soleimani for the last time. Misaki Nori gets the win. Moving forward, Soleimani, keep doing what you're doing. I take a couple of between fights, you know what I'm saying? Get your confidence back, get your skill set ready, and then challenge somebody big again. Or somebody big comes there up, gives you another opportunity to take that big step up fight, go for it. This is what happens in the kickboxing world. We challenge ourselves pretty early in this game, and usually against another guy who's world class. So go ahead, keep doing what you're doing, keep challenging the best. Misaki Nori, one of the best guys in the world, and it's very important. Not a lot of guys did it. Masato did it. Not a lot of guys since him. You got to leave home. You got to leave Japan, and you got to challenge yourself out against the best in the world, and you've got to see what the rest of the world is like, because you really can be spoiled to fight at home all the time, and it's good to have that home audience, but I'm telling you, the greats leave. The greats leave home, and in Japan, that's part of it. And it's not that Masato did it all the time. He really didn't. You know, I think he just had a few fights, lost one in Thailand, and he had a few opportunities, just, you know, less than three, if I can remember off the top of my head. He mainly moved his career in Japan. But I'm telling you, it's important to leave Japan and find out how good you are. And it's not that you can't do it at home, because, you know, it is they do have really good combat history there, and the promoters do bring in fighters from outside of it. But it means something to me that Misaki Nori left home and went to fight in France. That's a big deal. And I'm glad he did it. And I want to see more from him coming forward, because for him, it's just about getting his game together to have the complete performance of defense and enough offense to beat Ku Fairtex. Because Ku actually didn't land the significant shots that he landed against other guys. I thought Nori had the defensive part down for the most part. But I just think he didn't have the return offense to make the fight interesting, like to get himself more opportunities. He's playing defense so much that Ku was able to find his moments. So if they're going to change that, if that's going to, you know, be different down the road, Nori's got to keep putting his offense together. He's got to, you know, make sure that he's consistent, because he'll lose a weird fight here and there. And then when he gets his opportunity to fight for that, you know, 65kg title once again, he's got to have more offense with the defense that he already has. Actually, I will go one more, but this one didn't happen in France. Anissa Mexen, best female fighter in the world, takes on Fanny Palumpi. Fanny is a girl who's fought a lot of the elite women in the world, but it hasn't gone her way in those opportunities. She had a pretty good run earlier in this year where she went to Thailand and she got some solid wins in a kickboxing tournament that took place in Thailand. Plus, she's always had the old-school, full-rules Muay Thai style. She likes to play in the clinch. She likes to play the body kicks. She's got one of the best, you know, wide crew that you're ever going to see before a fight. She's got a really, really long one. But like I said before, she struggled against some of the better girls, someone like a Mom Barlow, for example. Anissa Mexen was able to go out there and complete offense for the entire fight once again, always savvy with her kickboxing, her combination game, her low kick game. Afterwards, Fanny said that she felt like she was injured. She only gave like about 20%, would like the opportunity again. She posted that on Facebook. And that'd be cool if they got that opportunity again, because this is women's Muay Thai. This is a sport that could invite rematch sooner than later. Like, it's no problem if somebody wanted to do that. And sometimes it does happen later. But, man, we've got a history of, you know, I wrote it before, we are a rematch sport. So go ahead, do it again. If you feel when you get 100%, fine. But, of course, it's going to be tough to beat a Anissa Mexen, even if you're 1,000%, because she's a truly, truly great talent. And she can do a lot of good things well. Her offense is really strong. Low kick game really strong. I want to see more from her. And of course, she's one of the few women in the world that has KO pop at that weight. So good stuff from her. Hopefully to see more from her down the road. I'm going to go ahead and move into the Infusion card that happened. Their tournament continues. And there's a lot of good things, a lot of, things that we expected. But all in all, their six-man tournament is, continuing to move. And it had a lot of entertaining fights in it. Tavon Oskin gets a victory over Sergio Canters, or Sergio, excuse me, Sergio Nino, Serginho Kanters. And Kanters is a solid fighter. He's just not on Oskin's level. Oskin is just in his own. I feel like it's his tournament to lose. He's the best guy, and the only way he's losing this tournament is if he just doesn't show up himself. He's got the two wins now. I think Nordenberg and Moe's got two wins as well. So I think those guys are the leaders. And, you know, Jiraiya has got 1 point. Grice Basuku has got 1 point. Yanni Risco does not have a point yet. I'm trying to remember it off the top of my head, I believe he's got the two losses. So, but yeah, you know, the way they're breaking this down for these six to, you know, all fighting, you know, these six competitors to kind of have a seasonal fight and then put a tournament at the end of it, it's a fun thing to play with. The only problem was they didn't have enough new names. They had names that we're familiar with, so it's putting fights that we know. But at the same time, some of those fights are going to be awesome. You know, Norden Ben Mo, him and Muhammad Jiraiya had fight of the year earlier this year. It seems like a million years ago, but that was in France. But they're both in this tournament. Oskin's still doing his work. He's in this tournament. I just see him as the best guy here, you know, as they do this, you know, league-esque format where they, you know, count up, you know, they're kind of doing it like, you know, World Cup, how they have their seeding and how they have their points that you get for wins and knockouts, that kind of stuff, whatever. You know, they've got a system that's similar here. Oskin comes out there, puts together the kickboxing performance that, you know, makes him who he is. He moves on, and I believe his next one is going to be Christ Basuku. Speaking of Christ Basuku takes a Norden Ben Mo. Christ coming off a win, Norden coming off of a win. Ben Mo just had more. Christ, he can throw in volume, and he's very tall, you know, for the weight class. The problem is he's never been the best defensive guy, and sometimes when you throw in a flurry, he's used to a guard where he covers up for a little bit and then reaches in for the clinch, and that allowed Norden Ben Mo to find moments to score offense here and there. So we'll see what happens with these guys moving forward. But Norden Ben Mo, he gets the big win, and of course we all know, rematch 1 year later in February, he will do it again with Muhammad Jiraiya, where they put on, you know, one of the great kickboxing fights that you're ever going to see as far as drama goes. That's where he's headed. Muhammad Jiraiya and Janae Risco. Risco, I knew, was going to have a tough time once he got into this tournament field. He came into it riding the high of getting that victory over, you know, Andy Sauer. So, you know, I'm sure he thought when this was all, you know, put together, it'd be good for him in the long run. Unfortunately, not the case. He takes on the 19-year-old and he just struggles with the speed. You know, Jiraiya is just, you know, I thought that Johnny Risco was consistent in rounds 2 and 3. And I thought Jiraiya actually faded a little bit. In third round, he was not throwing as much offense. Commentary was right to bring it up. But Muhammad Jiraiya started off, you know, house on fire as he usually does. Combinations, looking for his offense, pushing the pace, doing a lot of the good things that makes him special as a fighter. Just the flow of combinations, the speed, the low kick game. I thought that he was consistent with it. And he did a good job to use it to get up early. I just think that he just faded physically and wasn't as offensively effective in the later rounds, in that third round, despite the fact that Jiraiya gets to win here. I personally feel that the weight class is too big for him. This would be 72.5, so we're talking about 160 pounds. So it would be middleweight for those who are boxing fans. I think Jiraiya is more at home at 54. Like, that's my personal opinion. Now, for all I know, I'm wrong. Maybe he's, like, huge, and maybe he's slowing down because the weight cut's affecting him. I just look at his frame, and I go, you would be a really perfect size 70kg fighter. So, but we know what's coming next for Jiraiya. Norden Ben Mo. Next fight in the card, we get Michael Duke as he takes on and gets a victory over Nikolai Fallen. It's unfortunate because, I mean, Duke was winning the kickboxing, and then Fallen throws a right hand, injures himself, and he cannot compete anymore. TKO victory goes in the way of Michael Duke. He's happy to get his hand raised, but I know he didn't want it like that. You know, it's a guy who's trying to turn it around. He's got a big one coming up next week. On Glory, so I'm glad that he got through. I'm sure he's glad that he got through healthy, and he's looking for the opportunity to fight and impress. I was there the first time these guys fought. I believe that was in Chicago, if I'm remembering correctly. I think it was. I can't remember exactly, but I thought that was where they fought the first time. But anyways, Duke is excited to go in there and, you know, compete at Glory, and it's just, for him, it's all about mental. Because I was in the back, and I remember it was me, and it was Gokhan Saki, and there was a couple other guys, and they are watching him, you know, compete. And they are the moment that he had gone down in the fight. I mean, I'm trying to remember the exact date of that, because I could be thinking of two different cards. Yeah, well, anyways, the moment he goes down in the fight, he just kind of has this moment where it looks like he can go on, and he doesn't. And then right away, someone in the back says, I think it was Gokhan Saki, like, man, he's got the skill, but, you know, it's just the fighter's heart. Like, people are always going to get on him about his fighter's heart. So Duke, when Duke got the win here, I'm sure he was excited, ready to compete, ready to go out there to show, you know, that he's can be a contender at the weight class. Because it looked good when he hit, you know, Tyrone Spong first, and then Tyrone Spong hit him back, and it didn't look as good. Not just as good in terms of he got hit with a huge overhand shot, but he went down, and he just was, like, mentally gone. So, you know, we'll see what happens with Duke moving forward. Should be good. Next fight on the card, we get Kang Super Pro Samui gets a victory over Pascal Costal. Just too much skill here. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Kang because they've been inconsistent. They use a guy from Super Pro Samui here and there, and then I don't see him for a while. So good for Kang to get this victory. Fikri Amaziane gets a victory over Cameron Amenizade. And the reason why I like this victory for Fikri is, you know, he's always been a bigger, thicker guy. You know, he's got a lot more gut now. Than even when I remember seeing him fight Daniel Guida in France, you know, 5 years ago, I think that was, that I got to see him fight live. And again, he took that one on short notice. But man, it just didn't come together for him. So I'm glad that he's getting the opportunity to compete. And maybe he can put together some consistent kickboxing and have an okay run. But overall, he hasn't, you know, and again, it's not like he was thought of as this super prospect, but he was getting the training opportunities and he was getting to compete with a lot of guys. So you were thinking that, you know, better times were coming as he developed, but the development just didn't come the way that I think a lot of people thought. So he gets the win here. Happy for him. Well, let's see what happens. I'm expecting to see him at the Glory Card hanging out next week because I've seen him, you know, kick it with Badr Hari quite often. So we'll see what happens. Last fight I'm going to talk about, Iman Barlow defends her title again, this time against Ilsuri Andreski. Ilsuri was a replacement. Originally, this was supposed to be Melanie Huggins of Holland. Melanie Huggins had an MMA fight scheduled. She decided to just focus on that MMA fight, and she got out of the fight. Her and Barlow had already fought before. Barlow had already had a victory over her. Ilsuri is given good effort. You know, it's not for lack of trying. Just Barlow is just better. Just a better fighter. I mean, two examples back-to-back of, I talked about the number one and number two female fighters on the planet. There's two things that they have going for them. One, of course, they're extremely skilled. You know, of course, they are better than the other girls. In most cases, they're the better athlete, you know, and like 99% of the fights. So both of those are great and good signs. The great thing about it is both of them are very active. Like, I want to say this was Barlow's, I don't know, seventh fight this year. And I want to say that Mexen fought about 5-6 times as well. That's more than a lot of the guys. And normally when women are, like, extremely, you know, talented, fewer people want to fight them, you know. We've got this history of, I couldn't find a fight. So then, you know, we broke the news where we had Urina Byers, and she couldn't find a fight for a long time, you know, after she... It's not just that girls thought, you know, and their coaches thought that they would lose to her, but they didn't think the money was right to take the opportunity. So she couldn't find a fight. Iman Barlow has been able to consistently find fights, despite the fact that she's been dominant in most of them. So, good stuff here. Another dominant performance by her. She said that it's her last fight for the year, so she could just sit back, chill, enjoy the rest of the year, train, and see what's, you know, looking for her in January, February next year. They usually do that their own card in March for, you know, where she's from. I'm always excited to see Iman Barlow compete. Very, very talented. Good stuff. And good, more good news coming from, you know, the Infusion brand, because this week they've got a fight card going down. But the main thing that I want to mention about this fight card is the fact that the main event is Ibrahim the Beast Elbusante as he takes on the Cobra, Andrew Tate, 90 kg belt on the line. this is going to be awesome. It's the kind of fight that you want to see. Andrew Tate's got that, you know, hybrid, you know, waist-high kickboxing style with the low kick game of kickboxing in K1. The movement, he's hard to hit, you know, consecutive times a lot. Ibrahim El-Bastadi, of course, new up-and-comer. Very strong for the weight class, very good fighter. It's just, it's a great fight and a great time for this great fight. You know, it's just, I've been excited to see all of the, you know, fight cards that have been going down, and I've been excited to see all the fight opportunities that have been put together of late. But when I saw that that one was announced, I was like, that's going to be some good stuff. Like, that's the kind of fights that you want to have on a regular basis. And I mean, I'm just grateful that we are now at a place in kickboxing where we're starting to see these opportunities a lot more. Going to go ahead and move to another card now. I'm going to go from Infusion Talk to, let's go ahead and talk about some Lion Fight, shall we? Lion Fight goes down this, you know, past weekend. Oh, let me see. I don't want to leave that Infusion card undone. I mean, there are some other notables on it, but it's mostly a development product, our development league. I'm going to go ahead and stick with the bigger fights. Stick with that one fight, and then I can give you guys the results as they happen if you want to know about the smaller fights on that show. But I'm going to go ahead and give you a couple from Lion Fight that went down the other week. And then I can talk about the whole card. I'm going to talk about some of it. Regan Ursel gets a victory over Jake Purdy of England. The Dutch fighter now defends his title after getting a win over Joe Nottawatt and one of the cooler knockouts of the year, one of the cooler knockouts you're going to see. Nottawatt started to fade a little bit in that fight. At the end, Ursel was able to score one of the meanest head kicks you're going to see, cleaned him out. He said he'd been reading his defense and he'd watched how he bailed, and then he timed it perfectly. So he moves on. He gets Jake Purdy. He blows Jake Purdy out. Two things that have got to be of note. Shout out to Mike Chavella for bringing up how weak the ropes were. This is dangerous. You can't have a weak top rope in kickboxing at all, in Muay Thai or kickboxing. There's just too many times that they fall on it. And if that thing's loose, you know, he brought up that the commentary, he brought up that the commission and some of the people working ringside were laughing when they saw people go over the top and when they saw that how loose it was. He's right. It was not funny. Chavelle was right to bring it up. It would have been laughing until somebody came and their neck was injured. Then they were like, you know, like you said, it's a lawsuit waiting to happen because there's a commission that's forcing action to happen in there. They're forcing, like, hey, you paid to compete at this time, and this is the ring that you're going to compete in. How they could have somebody, you know, have those kind of strict rules and not have somebody to walk around the cage, check the stability of it, and say, okay, this isn't going to work out. In NFL, if they have people who've got bad fields, they address that, you know. Super Bowl has bad field. They do different things, too. Like, if it's going to rain a lot and the Super Bowl here in America and they're going to, you know, play football in 2 weeks, they're going to put something over the tarp to make sure that it's at its best condition for when the athletes perform. Now, again, it's natural ground with a lot of them. Sometimes it's turf, but most of the time it's natural ground. So it's difficult for them to try to pull something like that off. It is not difficult for someone to tighten up the ropes. You know, they're not worried about some, you know, landmass that they're trying to nurture. This is something that was man-made that just needed to be tightened, and they didn't get on it. You know, and it could have hurt somebody. But in the end, the only hurting that was really, really done was by Ursel, who put together a complete performance. He probably scored a couple knockdowns right at the end of the first round, but one of them, the one that they didn't call, I thought was legit, and the one that they did call looked more like Ursel just kind of went down before the kick landed on him, but he still hurt from the barrage before. So that was one down, and then there were three more downs. He went hook to uppercut, landed clean, scores a down in the second round, then scores another uppercut while it looked like Purdy was trying to throw either an elbow or something big over the top, and the uppercut just caught him clean. Longer strike winning, uppercut over elbow, if I remember that correctly. The uppercut was extended out the elbow. The separation between the bicep and the forearm was enough to make the uppercut longer as it came in clean underneath. And then it went right underneath Purdy's shot and dropped him again. But Purdy was tough. He got up after this. He went right into the clinch, scored some knees. He got a sweep. He threw some kicks. And then Ursel walked him down, scored some offense, and then caught him with a big jumping knee, and that's what ended the fight. But if you are a coach, I want you to show footage to your fighter of Jake Purdy after that first down and after that second down. He didn't quit. He did not quit. Everything was not going his way, and he decided he was going to bite down and fight back anyways. That's how you do it. That is how you do it. And that's just me. I watched the fight as a fight fan. I'm like, hey, history is not going to remember this kid's effort. They're only going to remember Ursel won in dominant fashion. But Jake got up, and Jake fought back, and I thought that that was huge. So it's super proud of what happened in that one, and I'm excited to see what's going to come from, you know, Ursel down the road. Super proud of Purdy, and I know he'll get other opportunities. He's a good enough fighter, so his day will come. Next fight on the card I'm going to talk about is the brilliant performance from Antonina Shevchenko as she takes on Ioana Wymans. The moment I saw this one was scheduled, I knew that this was all Antonina Shevchenko. Ioana Wymans, to her credit, is the all-action hero of the women's fight world. Like, she's always going to bring it. She's always going to try. She's always going to throw hands. She's a very, very exceptional fighter. She is talented in a way that her read and her understanding of distance and her understanding of striking, it shows up so much more when you're more offensive to her. And sorry, there's a glitch there. I don't know if you guys noticed it in the recording, but there's a glitch. I thought I fixed it. But anyways, back to what I was saying about Antonina. Her patience, her ability to find range on the straight left hand, her movement, her body kicks, the way she plays in the clinch. Not as heavy on the elbow. She finds one here and there. But just really just positioning, and she's got the right kind of mind for it. She could really fight. So when I saw that she was matched up with Wymans, I was like, okay, this is Wymans is going to come over to America and she's going to bring her best fight. And Wymans is another person who it'll never be a lack of effort for why she wins or loses. You know, she's always going to bring it. She just ran into somebody who just has slick down. And that's one thing that Wymans has always struggled with. She's got her combo flow down. She's got, you know, fighting in the pocket down. But she needs someone to cooperate a little bit more. By cooperate, somebody who's going to play the game with her. But if she's got to pursue, if she's got to, you know, be more active with her feet and try to search her opposition down, those are going to be tougher bouts for her, and that's why I didn't go her way this time. Still, she's a good fighter. She can win up. She can beat a lot of girls. She's still a name that you want to use internationally in your fight card, but Antonina Shevchenko is just another level. Very, very talented. It's hard to get a read on how skilled she is, and I'm hoping that they, you know, when you're in there, you realize that, okay, what I saw on film and what's happening right now, it's way different. She can keep her range way better than I thought. She punches harder than I thought. You know, where I watched the opponent before, you know, her last opponent, the girl was so befuddled that she didn't do anything. You know, like, she just kind of stood there for a while just trying to figure stuff out. So her team is just kind of yelling for her to throw off and just go. But they didn't realize what she had realized. When I try to just go, Antonina scores inside of my offense every time. She counters in between. She's punching while I'm punching and she's hitting me. She's kicking while I'm kicking and she's hitting me. She's kicking while I'm punching and she's hitting me. It's so difficult when you're in there. You know, it's easy to say on TV and it's easy to say from the corner. But sometimes when the athletes actually on the other end are standing across from someone who's exceptional on the feet, it's a lot harder. And they've got to try to figure something else out. Ioana Wymans didn't make the mistake that the other opponent made. She at least went for it. She just wasn't able to find the offense because Antonina was just that much better. Next fight I'm going to talk about, and the last fight I'm going to talk about in this card, Joe Nottawatt gets a victory over Hassan Toy. Joe Nottawatt, of course, won short notice. He beat, he won his last one. I can't remember how short notice it was. But it was against Malapet anyways, and he won that one very clear, 4 rounds, if not 5-0. This one, same thing. Hassan Toy was game, but man, his body was getting eat up with kicks like all night. He ate every possible body kick that he could possibly eat. Tough guy, stood in there, went the distance. Joe Nottawatt, just too much. Just too much, too skilled, too much movement. Nottawatt is going to be a mainstay for them. They're going to call him as much as they can. He's there for them, you know, with a full camp or short notice. he is there for the Lion Fight brand. So solid stuff there. There were a couple other fights. Chip Morozo, Pollard gets a victory over Bet, Brett Havlicek, and then Yusin Verdugo got a victory, and then PJ Swada got a victory as well. I only wanted to break down the first three fights because I thought that those were the kind of exceptions to the card. So that does it for that. I'm pretty much going to end with some notes, and I'm going to have Sorry, I don't know if you guys noticed it. I had another little glitch there, but I'm back at it. Also of note, just to wrap the show up, we had a couple notes. One, I want to talk about the card going down in China this weekend on the 3rd, as we've got one of the better fighters in the world, Elias Blade. He's going to take on Xie Li, X-I-E-L-E-I. As young as Blade is, Lee's even younger, if I remember correctly. Hold on, let me go to my notes. I think he's even younger. Yep, he's a couple years younger. So this should be a good one. Of course, I'm leaning towards Blade, one of the better fighters in the world. But, of course, you never know with some of those scorecards. This one's at 67 kgs, so neither guy's, in particular with Dry, he's not cutting as much as he normally cuts. So that should be interesting. What we got? Kyria and Jomthong will be fighting. Let me see. Just going through my notes here. These are just some ones that I just added just as we were wrapping up the show. We also had the fights announced for... Hiroya had a big-time KO this past weekend in one of the fights. I posted it on my Facebook. He was... I cannot find... where it is. Oh, that's just one mentally that I didn't have wrote down. Please forgive me on that one. That's just one that kind of popped into my head. And I just decided that, man, I got to go back and find where that is. But Hiroya was in a fight where he pretty much was very slow. He was getting hit a lot, waiting for his moments. And then, bang, he was able to find big-time offense. And one of your coolest step-back, counters you're going to ever find. He scores clean. And then, of course, he wipes the whole – finishes the fight off. With a barrage. I can't think of the opponent right now. Please forgive me. That fight was not one that I had in my notes, but definitely check it out if you get a chance. Hiroya, he had a big-time KO. Fang Biang gets another win. He's one of the better fighters in China. He's been winning consistently there for quite some time now. Let me see. Other things to pay attention to. Definitely go find. You don't even have to find the whole thing. But Shannon Briggs talks about his experience fighting for K1 on the Joe Rogan show. And I remember saying it because he announced it like he showed the fight on his Facebook or on his Instagram. And then he talked about below that it was the hardest he had ever felt. And he's like, man, I'm not going to make it if this guy kicks me one more time. And he has a full breakdown of what he was thinking in that match. And again, that was against a guy who was a wrestler, not even a kickboxer. So how awesome was it that he, would have that full of a breakdown for what he was experiencing? So shout out to him. What we got? Masato and Takanori Gomi are going to, kickbox on New Year's Eve. That was one of the bigger shows last year, was Masato and Kid Yamamoto doing an exhibition kickboxing match. Definitely check that out if you get a chance. I think that's it. I'm just wrapping it up with a couple of notes. Glory announced the LA card in full. I won't talk about the whole thing. I will say that the title between Jason Wilnes and Israel Adesanya will also be added to that card to go with the Robin Van Roosmalen and Matt Embry main event at the top of the card. The whole undercard is full too. Won't get into those fights because, most of it is, just a lot of guys from America. Most of the time, that's what it is. This time, not as many. I'd say about 3 or 4, but I'll talk about that more when we get closer to it. So go ahead and wrap the show up on my final thoughts on Mark DeBonte. As I said before, it is official that, what we all thought has come true. He was indeed, he was found killed in the water near where his car was located. I remember I was a little, my first thought was, if he was near the car, why did it take him so long to find him? Because that would have been, one of the first places, that you would think that they were checking. But I just, it was just one of those gut instinct reactions to this could have been over earlier, but I didn't give any credit due to what it takes for a cop in those situations. It's tough, you know. It's not like they've got an insta diving team ready to go looking for that sort of thing. But they did find Devontae officially now. It's sad, you know. I think as a fighter, my biggest memory of him, you know, and this is a guy who had some, you know, big wins in his career. My favorite moment of his whole fight career, his entire fight career, is when Joe Vellante put together one of the cooler combinations to high kicks that you're ever going to see. And he dropped Devontae. And then Devontae, as if he was the Undertaker, the WWE, pops straight up with his torso and looks at him, then gets to his feet. And from that moment on, he took over the fight. It's just one of everybody kind of has their memory of him. Some people actually knew him. One of the guys who listened to my podcast was talking about how he goes to his gym and he wasn't the kind of guy to kind of get into anything bad. Just, you know, just kind of happened to him. But shout out to Mark Devontae, his gym, his people. Prayers and thoughts go out to you. The whole kickboxing community mourned and they had their words, and everybody on Twitter hit up liverkick.com. They talked about all the different fighters, you know, just, you know, paying their respects to a guy who was a really, really talented fighter and gone too soon. So Mark Devontae, to you and your family, definitely praying and thank you for what you brought to the kickboxing community. As a fan of the sport, as a person who reports on the sport, I love everybody who has given anything to this game, and I wish you all the best. So God bless everybody. Thank you for listening to my podcast, and have a good one. Peace.